Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. Now for 2020, the Friday Special series will be running every week, and each week I'll have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification, effects pedals. We're going to have brands, producers, musicians, etc. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Oram from Fidelity Guitars. Matt, hello and welcome to the show.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Yes, I'm good. I'm sorry, that was a very formal beginning. I'm trying to sort of, trying to get better at reading scripts and not sounding like I'm reading scripts, but I'm always constantly very aware.
It's very professional, very enthusiastic.
Thank you.
Two things that I struggle with, so I'm going to try and bring myself up to your level.
Yeah, well, yes, there you go. It's the years of experience. But
it shows.
Thanks, yeah. But yeah, thank you for coming on to the show. Obviously, we've known each other for a few years, and Guitar Nerds as a whole has been a big fan of Fidelity Guitars since we discovered your brand. So
I should say thank you for. I think you're one of the first sort of people that realised we existed, and it's meant a lot in terms of keeping it going and getting this to where we are now. So I put it on record.
Oh, thanks. Cheers. Mate, thanks. But it's been wonderful to see the evolution of the company, to see kind of where it's gone from these kind of cool, really weird boutique guitars to now what is. And you know, listener, if you're not aware of Fidelity Guitars, you certainly should be. I'm going to give you a brief overview anyway at the start, but for what is a very, very well-established boutique brand, and a very unusually established boutique brand to still be kind of a one-man outfit. Like, not many custom shops can boast two signature models with major bands in their lineup. That's really quite something to be proud of.
Yeah, well, cheers. That was a funny one. So I think it's about 18 months ago now. So it was only after about a year of doing it full-time, getting Josh and Jay Wilgoose on board. I mean, it was totally I kind of engineered it, but in the sense that I thought, well, I'd really like to get these guitars into hands of bands that I really like. So yeah, and I'd really like it to be British bands. So sort of get British guitars into the hands of British bands, and sort of made a little list of five or six bands that I really liked, and sort of had enough of a profile that it would help me as well. And just sent people emails, and so amazing. Like, he's probably not going to appreciate what you're saying, but Public Service Broadcasting, you can get his email address off his website. So that one was easy. And then Josh from the Horrors, again, through their management, and just got an email back and kind of worked out and said, do you want to do something? And both of them are lovely guys and said, yeah. And it was all really, really easy. And that's been amazing, sort of seeing those guitars go to the Royal Albert Hall last year. And
that was right, with Public Service Broadcasting playing in the Royal Albert Hall. And it wasn't just a guitar, there was a bass there as well for that.
Yeah. So that was one of the first short scale basses that we did as well. So yeah, with flats on that as well. So it's got a really good sound.
Oh yeah, amazing.
But yeah, that was pretty mad to have both those guitars at the Royal Albert Hall, and then with Josh sort of taking that guitar around the world for a year or so.
Well, exactly. And Josh from the Horrors, you know, using that guitar, it ended up in the hands of Mr. Foo Fighters himself.
it was a very strange day. So Josh was kind of moonlighting in London at the Moth Club, which is a tiny little venue. So he was playing guitar with Kieran Leonard, who's amazing. So he's playing under the sort of the moniker Saint Leonard as the opening act, and the surprise guest was Dave Grohl and Rick Astley on drums. And so I'd fallen asleep on the sofa, and I woke up about 1 in the morning, and phone was bouncing around. It was like, this is nonsense, I can't process this. I just went to bed, and then woke up the next morning, a billion messages, and then Enemy article, which is like that's the best for me, because I was just an Enemy kid growing up, like that was my Bible. So to have an article with my guitar and the Enemy was an amazing thing, and Guitar Magazine and stuff as well. And yeah, so and just to get some videos and pictures of Dave Grohl playing one of those guitars, it looks absolutely tiny on him.
He's such a broad fella.
Yeah, but,
and that was the Horror Signature one. And of course, as an Enemy kid, you know, you must be incredibly chuffed with getting something into the hands of the Horrors, you know. Anyway, I know you said that you obviously engineered and picked those bands, but the Horrors really an absolute poster boy band for that sort of Enemy origins.
It's mad. I grew up with them. So from the first album, I think the gig last year at the Royal Albert Hall, the latest was 10 years of Primary Colours, their second album, kind of the breakthrough album, which is still like one of my favourites. And Stu Tate and I went along and behaved like children. It was brilliant. But to sort of be able to just hang out with Josh occasionally and chat to him and to get him out there sort of playing guitar, and I think it's going to crop up on the next record, whenever that may be, is a really cool thing.
Yeah, that's incredible. And of course, getting Jay Wilgoose as well from Public Service Broadcasting, my girlfriend Emma's favourite band.
Oh, really?
Public Service Broadcasting. Yeah, well, so.
One of mine as well. And yeah, he's a really sort of lovely guy as well, and an amazing guitar player. He's I can't remember the guy's name from Battles. I'm sure you know Battles.
But, yes, I know Battles very well. I couldn't name them.
So I've seen him live a couple of times. Like, one of my favourite bands, and the main guy can play. He'll play a synth angled up at 90 degrees on either side of him, and the guitar at the same time. So he'll be playing one of the synths and then tapping on the guitar, and he'll kind of switch hands and stuff. And I've seen Jay Wilgoose do that live as well. And you can't do that if you're not like pretty hot. So he's very underrated and underrated in his own mind as well, but a really, really good player and a great band. So again, yeah, so happy just to see his guitars out and about with bands that I like. I saw them in Belfast, I think it was last summer or the summer before, but it's when the White Star Liner EP came out, and that guitar is on that record. So to see
fantastic.
Them, so on Titanic Slipway, where the Titanic was built, playing a song about the Titanic after we'd just been around the Titanic Museum with that guitar was really cool. That was a good day.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's wonderful. Now we haven't actually really spoken about the brand of kind of assumed knowledge of our listener, which we shouldn't do. So we should talk a bit about the brand and what the guitars are, because these are uniquely shaped retro inspired guitars and retro. They are retro come modern, but that is a very, very retro come modern is kind of the thing at the moment. Well, it certainly is for guitar nerds. You know, these are the sort of brands we're interested in, because of course we don't cover a lot of very, very modern shreddy guitars, and there are a lot of great companies out there doing that sort of thing. But the other side of thing, from boutique companies, it does feel like everyone is doing a sort of 50s, 60s inspired guitar with some modern tweaks to make them comfortable and playable. And you've managed to do this and make the guitars very unique. Like, I feel like you've lent far less on existing body shapes than a lot of other brands.
Potentially. I think you're right, there's a lot of it out there. At the same time, there's a lot of great stuff out there, so I'm not going to sort of cry about there being so much competition. I love those guitars as much as anyone else. But so the Stella Rossa is probably the most directly inspired by a previous model. So that's based on the Stella Japonica, which was a 60s like Japanese catalog guitar. And that came from Mark Ransley at Mojo Pickups, who winds all our pickups. He commissioned the first one, so he said, can you make me one of these? And if you look at a picture of the original Stella Japonica, it looks like it's a Friday afternoon job. Someone's been given a rectangular bit of wood and a bandsaw and gone kind of make a Telecaster. yeah, all right, I'm going home.
It is almost a square, isn't it? It's a slightly squeezed rectangle. That's kind of the shape.
Yeah, it's weird because like the horns are as wide as the hips on it or the waist on it, and so it's very rectangular. So kind of took that and said, all right, can I fiddle around with it a little bit and made it a little bit more symmetrical and a little bit sort of more easy on the eye. But it's still very directly based on that shape. But the other two main shapes in the catalog, so the double standard, the first one I came up with, that was really just from measuring up all my favorite guitars, so Telecasters and SGs, stuff like that, and sort of drawing boxes and going, okay, well, guitars are supposed to be roughly this shape, and then starting to fiddle around drawing curves inside that until something resolves and you go, oh, yeah, I quite like that, and then trying to turn it into an actual physical thing. So that was literally where that came from.
I guess that's sort of an offset double cut, sort of.
Yeah, it's very slightly offset the waist, but it's nearly symmetrical, but not quite. And then it's got a sort of the horn on the bass side is much higher than on the treble side, and it's had a few tweaks over the years. So now it's got sort of a small German carve on the top and a forearm chamfer and a belly cut. So it's taken in some sort of Strat Comfort sort of carves into it as well to make it a little less slabby, because it was very sort of Telecastery originally,
right?
So that was that one. And then the JB was JB is John Barlow, so he's my my brother-in-law, and my sister commissioned a guitar for him for his birthday, for his 40th, and he's a big like rockabilly fan of Gretsch's, and he sketched out his like ideal guitar on the back of a napkin or whatever, and so she managed to steal that and get it over to me and make something that looked like that, and then that was the first one of those, and that's turned into a full model. So really, apart from the double standard, it's been people going, oh, can you make this, and then going, yeah, I can make that, and then thinking, oh, that's a really good idea, I'm gonna pinch that and turn it into a proper model.
But, and they've all got their own unique feel with it. Like, I guess coming back to the Stella Rosa, that was, came from this Mojo Pickups thing, and you know, you can tell that this instrument was originally commissioned by someone into pickups, because there's probably more metal on it than there is wood.
Yeah, I mean, part of that comes from the original Japonica. So that original guitar that the shape was based on also had this stupid oversized like pickup surrounds, like cosmetic pickup surrounds that were almost right. as wide as the guitar. So I've actually scaled them down for our one, but
but it's three huge Mojo, what were the pickups called?
Yeah, they're Charlie Christians, but they're in a P90 housing, so they've got right. a big blade magnet, but they're super low output. The resistance on them, so they're not low output, they're low resistance, so they're about 2 or 3K,
right?
But wound with a really thick wire, and they're some of the loudest things I've ever heard, but they're so detailed. There's just, you can't, even if you like load on loads of gain on them, they still retain a lot of the clarity and a lot of the sort of note to note and string to string definition. And they're kind of my benchmark now. I used to
really,
so yeah, I'd have chosen a gold foil like 9 times out of 10, but since hearing those, like I struggle to find anything that to my ear sounds better, but then that's such a subjective
thing. Of course it
thing,
is, yeah. So. That tends to be what you go for in the other guitars, in the JB and in the double standard, gold foils, sort of the pickup, I guess, I associate fidelity
yeah.
with.
And that's partly influenced by Mark at Mojo. Sort of his forte is, not necessarily his forte, but the sort of the core of his range is gold foils and Filtertron style stuff, so Mojotrons. And I've kind of followed that because I really like those as well. So if it's a humbucker, I prefer sort of a Filtertron style humbucker, and for single coils, there's something about gold foil that you can't really get that sound with other pickups.
Yeah, and I guess the German carve is kind of the other thing that features quite heavily on the other two guitars, and not so much on the Stella Rosa. On the Stella Rosa, it's just bound.
Yeah.
Right? There's not a German carve that I've forgotten about on the Stella Rosa, is there?
No, there is. There is going to be on the light stuff, but I guess we'll come back around to that. But yes, we will. So the Stella Rosa is sort of the premium model, and so that's bound on the top. We've done a double bound one for B-tronics as well. But that's like originally when I was sort of coming up with concepts for the guitars, that sort of 3 or 4 years ago, after having done the prototypes, like, I'm not doing binding because binding's a real pain in the ass. standard, and then so that model came around, and Mark was like, "Can you bind it?" And then it looked really good. So I was like, okay, so that one's going to be bound, but the other ones, the German carve helps to add a bit of shape and texture to it without the fiddliness of having to do binding on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I'm not ashamed of that. So they're built to a price, so
yeah.
It's not necessarily the the case that everything has to be the most amazing thing ever. Like if it was a 10 grand guitar, fair enough. But
well, that is kind of one of the other things about your brand, about Fidelity, is that you've managed to keep the prices incredibly low for a boutique custom shop.
All things being relative, I mean, two and a half grand is still a good chunk of money. You're right, in the context of sort of being made by one person and a few helpers in a little shop in Europe, they're as cheap as I can sort of get away with and still pay the rent. But that comes down to sort of my perspective on it. It's just I wouldn't pay more than that for a guitar, probably, unless it was some unreal kind of vintage rarity. I think for a new guitar, I'd struggle to sort of rationalize spending more than two or three grand on a guitar, no matter how good it was. Because at the end of the day, they're just bits of wood and metal and plastic and glue. And the important thing is how they sort of make you feel to me, and the songs that come out of them, rather than any sort of prestige that hangs around it. So I try and strip that back, and there's still a lot of like premium stuff going on in there, particularly on sort of the custom hardware and that, but less so in terms of any sort of flamey, burly kind of stuff.
Well, you don't really go down the flamey burly. You don't really go down the flamey burly side of things, but
there's nothing wrong with that, though. It's like that, each to their own. Like that, and it's, to be honest, a part of it is that it's much easier to stick a load of paint over it and hide any imperfections in the wood than it is to do a natural, like, a fair play to anyone who does like completely woody guitars and just puts it on a show, because you put a lot of work into that to make sure that your wood works flawless. Otherwise, it's really obvious. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And also all of your stuff is relicked as well. Do you tier your relicking on custom shops? Do you give people levels like a Fender custom shop does, from classic to heavy?
Yeah, I'd kind of use like guidelines and use sort of previous builds as a reference point. But part of it is down to, there's sort of a few factors behind it. One of them is that I just like relic guitars. The other thing is that if I'm coming at it from the perspective of this is a tool to write songs on, then for me you shouldn't be afraid of sort of using and abusing that tool and putting a dent in it. So I'd rather put a lot of dents in it first and take that out of the equation, so you can just get on with sort of playing it. And the other part again comes down to the fact it's I'm in a small industrial unit with a couple of other very messy drum builders, and it's not easy to do like a completely flawless finish. So in order to build, and the main thing that goes into sort of a flawless guitar is time, as much as anything, and a very, very clean environment, neither of which really have when you're building to sort of a two grand price point. So by doing the relicking, it allows me some room to sort of work around any sort of minor flaws, but that's okay. I'm open about that. And when you see the sort of finished product, it's neither here nor there.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree. Now you mentioned, of course, the premium, one of the premium aspects being hardware. But I kind of feel like there's such attention to detail with Fidelity, and it doesn't just come down to the hardware. And I want, obviously we've spoken about you using Mojo pickups, but you're very specific about everything that comes with your guitars. So you mill your own bridges.
Yeah. I get a local, company to do it, or a couple of local sort of fabricators. So it's all our own designs. And then I pass those over to people who have much better CNC machines than I do. I've tried to cut the metal in-house and it doesn't end well. So give it to the guys who know what they're doing. But like a local custom motorbike manufacturers and guys who are sort of used to cutting billet aluminium and billet brass, and they'll do it for us. I try and keep as much of it as much of it I can local to Cambridge, and if I can't do that, I keep trying to keep it local in the UK and keep the money that goes into the guitars sort of distributed out amongst local manufacturers as well where I can. But yeah, it was really down to the fact of, this isn't like ragging on anyone, but there's so many great guitars out there, particularly in the style that we were talking about before, sort of influenced by the catalog stuff. But then with a off the shelf like Gotto like Chinematic chucked on it or stuff like that, it's fine. And it's fine, particularly if you're building to a price point, but it doesn't really, when I think of like Fender has all Fender hardware on it, or Gibson has Gibson hardware on it. Like if you want to make out that you're a proper brand, then why doesn't your guitar have all of your hardware on it as well? So that's not me being sniffy about it. It was just that was my vision for it, to say that these are going to be Fidelity guitars with Fidelity hardware on them. And then how can I do that? And coming up with those designs and then working out a way to get them made.
Yeah, absolutely. But then you, what do you use for your vibrato systems?
Yeah, so the ones on the Stella Rossa are a Fender USA Trem, but just dismantled and then rehoused in a new top plate.
Oh, that's really cool.
And yeah, it's just to get a different look on it. And sort of to fit it in with the shape of the guitar, that original sort of Jazzmaster Jaguar offset trem shape looks cool on those guitars, but doesn't necessarily suit sort of every shape. So I wanted to kind of make it fit, take the mechanism, but make it fit with the Stella Rossa shape a bit more. But then with a roller bar on it as well. So I've kind of engineered that top plate so that you can set it so the strings are traveling very low over the top of it as well. So there's a few bits of engineering there as well as the shape of it. But then for the other ones, been using Mastery stuff, which is brilliant and has a really great feel to it. Again, with a sort of making a roller bar in-house for that. And I've just got the first Descendant trem from Swope Guitars in, which is going on the build this weekend.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. Which I'm really looking forward to. It's an amazing bit of kit. It's so well put together, so I can't wait to see how it plays.
And all that stuff's tarnished, like a tarnished finish, which perfectly suits Fidelity as well.
Yeah, I felt really bad with that Descendant today. I was literally sort of having at it and getting the chemicals out and wrecking it. And it was, I wasn't feeling too clever while I was doing it. I think I managed to, the thing with trems, especially like everything else, you can kind of, you can scratch up and sand and put chemicals on and stuff. It doesn't really matter. You don't do that with a trem, you can quite easily ruin it. And the same with pickups, so you have to kind of be a little bit careful around stuff like that. But I got it looking good, but yeah, I didn't feel particularly good doing it.
yeah, I bet. And the other things that you ship stuff with, the straps are very cool. I love that you ship with accessories. I think that's a really cool thing. You feel like you're receiving a complete package, like a complete aesthetic thing, as well as, you know, as well as just the playing guitar.
I think it was that's totally it. It was just about making it the whole experience of receiving the guitar and opening it, particularly if you've sort of commissioned it and you've been waiting a while for it to make. It's not just the guitar turns up in a case and that's it. It's like the whole buying into the brand and everything that goes around it. So the straps are a Heister Camp. They're made down in Cornwall, I think, by a family down there.
Are they? I always assumed they were German.
No, the guy's name's Elaine, and I'm not sure where they're originally from. But yeah, they're very much sort of based in the UK. And then obviously he's got the Mojo pickups, and we try, yeah, and the cases. So we did for a little while start making sort of wooden cases in the shop. We've knocked that on the head for the minute just because trying to make them a bit stronger. It turns out making cases is quite hard.
when I borrowed one of the Stella Rosa Juniors from you, the single pickup version of that, and I think that came in that case. That case was a fantastic idea. And I know you were obviously trialing it at the time, but it was such a completely unique look as well.
Yeah, so it was laminated wood. So the drum manufacturers that I'm at workshop with, their forte is making laminates. So we basically made a guitar case in the way that you would make a drum shell. It worked. It looked really, really good and stained it. And the idea was, I want it to look like an old Italian, like, anti-gun case.
So,
like,
and it was great because the top was completely removable as well, rather than it hinging open.
Yeah, so it was almost like a presentation box as much as it was a fantastic case.
And a little. Did you have a little brass fidelity sort of thing hammered onto it?
Oh, that was great. Made that. It was a brass engraved plate with the serial number and stuff.
Such a great touch.
It's just those are the things that just make me like. Love not necessarily just guitars, love brands, and you get little things like that. Like that's I'm all about that. As much as it has to be a good core product, anything like that as well, I'm really into. So I try and do as much of that as I can. But yeah, those cases will come back. We're just working out how to re-engineer them so that they're a bit stronger.
Sure.
So in the meantime, we're using Hiscox, who we were using before, which is another UK brand, and they make great stuff.
Yeah, famously, the little leaflet you get inside a Hiscox has an entire family standing on one of the one of the cases.
Yeah, great, I don't know if they do that like on every case before it leaves the factory, but
who knows? I mean, at GAC, when all the guitar nerds hosts used to work there, it was I can't remember. I think it was Jay that made us all do it. But it was the selling pitch for Hiscox, actually. You got one out for a customer. You get it out and you get out another brand as well, because they'd want to look at cases. And Hiscox would always be a little bit more. And then you'd put it on the ground and you'd jump on it as hard as you possibly could and make it really violent, because you can't break those cases.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
No, I think the rate is up to like half a ton or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so what happened to the other cases?
We wouldn't do it on those. We wouldn't demonstrate. Okay. We'd just say that we can't do it on those because, you know, this
it will definitely break. Stuff,
yeah, and that was normally enough, to be honest, because, I mean, you know, to be honest, if you're going to fly something, which is the only time something's going to get damaged, you should be paying a lot more than you're paying for a Hiscox case anyway. And whilst I've had Hiscox cases break on flights, you know, if if they're being run over or really thrown from a distance. But, you know, short of, you know, it's a £90 case. You know, if you spend £200 on a flight case, it'll survive those things. But at £90, I think they do an incredibly good job of not breaking.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they are wicked. Now, I you know, we touched on it briefly, but I want to talk about your new series, because we've spoken about the shapes. We haven't spoken about the basses yet, but we'll get to that. We've spoken about the shapes, but you've introduced all of those guitar shapes into a new series. Well, I've already mentioned that, you know, the range is affordable in comparison to other similar custom shops at this sort of level. But you've introduced an affordable, like, accessible level, like, you know, super accessible level range, which just seems like madness to do when there's only one of you.
Yeah. We'll see how it pans out in a few weeks' time. I might have burnt out by then. But, it was always, from day one, it was always the idea. So, thinking back on it, sort of having conversations with my girlfriend Rachel about it at the time, coming up with a concept for what the brand was going to be. It was going to be, right, I want to make UK-made custom shop guitars under £1,000. And then I started sort of refining the designs and the hardware and everything like that. And it's like, I can't do it. I'd have to really compromise on that vision to do that. And the main, a big part of that being the fact that they're all semi-hollow guitars. So there's a lot of extra time and a lot of extra wood goes into it and doing that. And so I kind of revisited that when the coronavirus crisis hit, and all musicians got made unemployed overnight, and all guitar shops had to close their doors. And I was like, okay, this is going to be tough for a lot of people, but I still want to try and get these guitars into people's hands. And there's a lot of creativity out there, and I want people to create on them through this. So how can I try and get those guitars out there? And the idea was to go back to that original vision and say, right, okay, cut out the semi-hollow thing, which goes solid body, cut out the custom hardware that's made locally and just get stuff off the shelf, keep the Mojo pickups, and keep the fact that it's still sort of handmade. It's particularly the amount of time that goes into doing the neck and keeping the necks identical to the rest of the range, and what kind of price could I get that to. So it's come out about £900, including VAT and a gig bag and shipping and whatnot,
which is
with
amazing.
A few options.
And there are options that will that can push the price up a little bit on there, but
and so you can upgrade the standard pickup is going to be a fat Mustang, or so basically a Mustang but wound in a way to make it a bit more chunky sounding.
And you can have that neck, middle or bridge.
Yeah, so it's done with a swimming pool sort of route under the scratch plate, but that means that you can put it wherever you want. So, and then in future, if you want to change it, I'll just bash out another scratch plate for you and you can move it into a different position. So that's kind of a nice side effect of that as well. But yeah, so the standard one's the Mustang, and there's a couple of options for Mark's more premium kind of gold foil or Mojotron, the Filtertron style humbuckers. Or off the record. Can't we do off the record on the podcast? Never mind. whatever you want, basically, if you ask for it. And he's also just come up with a new budget version of a pickup, which will be like the Charlie Christian.
Oh, really? Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool indeed.
So that'd be really cool. It's got a very stripped back look in terms of sort of the housing for it, but if it sounds as good as that, then happy days. And that should hopefully, we'll see where it comes in. Don't hold me to it, but it'll probably come in as a no-cost option if you want that. Wow. So that'd be cool. So I'm waiting for the first one of those to come through.
I mean, I just think it's awesome. Like, you know, I've over the last couple of months got very, very into Gibson Melody Makers. So, you know, just the idea of having like just a single Mustang style pickup in a bridge position is very appealing and very cool. A very cool setup.
I think it makes you play in a different way. Like, I've always been a bells and whistles guy, and my guitar inspirations, sort of Radiohead would be the root of that. And I love being able to fiddle around with different sounds and toys and stuff like that. But then you play a guitar with one pickup and suddenly you play in a very different way to how you would normally. And for me, I play a lot better, not necessarily better technically, but a lot more cleanly and a lot more simply. And that's a really good thing in my mind.
Well, covering that, actually, coming back to that, on your original lineup, because that is one of the things about Fidelity guitars that I've certainly noticed, is there are a lot of tonal options on a Fidelity, and I'm kind of a one pickup, one, you know, volume control guy, but you make sure you can get every single sound out of your pickup configurations.
Yeah, I always had in mind that they'd be like studio tools, and that I would have, not exclusively, but that was okay. I wanted to have as much on tap as possible, and at the same time I want it to be accessible. And so the idea with sort of the Fidelity name almost coming from, I want it to be as high fidelity as possible as the default setting. So that's where the choice of pickups come from, but also the value of the pots, the no load tone controls are standard. So you've got a bypass on the tone control when it's fully open. So you just get as much sort of top and clarity and stuff like that as possible. And then that's your default position to then dial it back from. Because if you try and do it the other way, like if you've ever played a not great Les Paul and tried to make it sound bright and lively, you can't do it. Whereas if you've got a bright and lively guitar already, you kind of dial it back from there.
That's absolutely the case. I've always thought that, and it's actually something that Mark always says about maple necks. It's you know, better to have something very bright and be able to dial back from it than trying to artificially create that. I learned that this week, actually, trying to play an SG bass on a record that I'm recording and trying to make it sound like anything other than mud, but but anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, not at all. No, it's entirely. And the thing is, it's horses for courses as well. So those sounds can be great in the right context. And it's particularly, I think, if you've got a slightly muddy guitar and you gain it, then it can sound brilliant. But from my perspective, it was more about make it go the other way, make it as bright and lively as possible, and then you can dial it back. And then in terms of the options that you were talking about, like give everyone as many options as possible, and then you can get everything out of it until you wind it back and just focus on the one thing you want it to do. But then trying to make it accessible as well. So with the Stella Rossa, that's got, originally it had 7 different pickup selections in it. It's now got 11 different options.
Right,
so kind of gone down the rabbit hole. But at the same time, those are split across 2 circuits, and there's an A-B toggle switch. So you can basically set, if you're playing it live, you can set your 2 favorite sounds, and then you go bish bash, swap between the two, just quickly flip between sound A and B, and so it becomes a live tool as well. And that's kind of that would be sort of the core of my ethos when it comes to wiring and the way the guitars work, is have everything available, but then make it a simple split to get between at least 2 of the sounds, so you can use it in a live context.
Yeah, and because ultimately that's what everyone's going to have, you know, really, those two main sounds to switch between. Yeah, very cool. And that's something that's not on the Light series. It's actually, it is just a single volume, right? Single pickup, one volume, no tone?
One volume, one tone as well.
Oh, there is a tone.
So I kind of disguised it as, I wanted to do like a visual reference back to the core range. So what looks like it would be a rotary selector on the horn is actually the tone control in disguise. So on the metal plate, you've got the master volume and the output jack, and then on the horn you've got the master no load tone controller.
That's actually great, having your tone control up there out of the way. I like it. So
yeah, I was saying, you don't need to, you're not normally fiddling around with it, you're not doing sort of tone swells or anything like that, so it doesn't really matter if it's a little bit of a reach.
Yeah, no, exactly. Oh, I think that's really cool. That's a great location for it. So in the Light range, you've included all of your guitars as well.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend on the CAD software doing 9 different variations of every body shape, and people started asking about, I did the Stella Rossa kind of mock-up first and then started to make that into a prototype, and everyone was into it, but I got a lot of messages saying, can you do a double standard light, can you do a JB light? There's not really any reason that I can't. So it's the same platform with a different outline, same scale length, same neck. It's just the shape of the guitar that's different depending on what people prefer.
So that's one thing I guess that's changed for the JB, because the JB was a Gibson scale length, right?
Yeah,
and so that's now not on the Light.
No, it's not. And the double standard was a Fender scale length, and that's not. So they're all 25 inch now, which is the same as the Stella Rossa, which is PRS scale length.
I see.
which I prefer. I think just from a personal perspective, I think it's a good balance. And for some reason, the strings seem to ring in a really nice way. It sounds a bit hippie-ish, but like it seems to be really comfortable, and it seems to improve the sound ever so slightly. So I'm happy with that. So yeah, it kind of straddles that. If you're a Gibson player, it won't feel unfamiliar because it's only a quarter inch change of scale length. If you're a Fender player, it'll feel a little bit looser, but not massively so.
Yeah, definitely. That's I'd rather it go that way than the other way. What are you doing with profiles on the necks on the light? Then are they all the same, or are you keeping options on there?
Still a standard, just all the same. So it'd be sort of a medium to chunky C, because they're kind of a vintage C, I would say. They're kind of like they're very slightly asymmetrical because of the way that the heel is shaped and the way the headstock's shaped. But it's basically a slightly chunky C. But again, if people ask nicely, then they're carved one at a time. There's no reason that I can't cut them differently depending on what people want. So still that custom shop side to it. I'm not going to start being restrictive on stuff, just for the sake of it. Obviously I have to in certain areas, because if it goes too custom, then it massively increases sort of the, if not the hardware cost, then the time cost, and that's not viable. But for things like neck profile, it's fine.
Absolutely. And I guess, and of course, you wouldn't be a classic come modern boutique guitar designer if you didn't do everything in baked maple. And is that something that's not going to be on the light series?
It's an option.
It's an option.
So it's a 50 quid option, so you can have a flame like an AA grade, so a mid-grade flame, roasted flame maple neck on it with a rosewood board for an extra £50, which is which is as cheap as I can do it. But
that's hardly a price increase for having that. And then what the other options, it is just going to be sort of an ordinary like a pale maple sort of thing,
so standard was maple on maple, which to me it like the feel of it's really nice, and it sounds good. It's just it is what it is. It's cheap, so it allows me to get the guitar to come in at the price that it is. But in changing the woods is not the only cost increase. There is the actual cost of the more expensive wood, which is what I've tried to keep it down to in terms of the option costs.
Cool. And I guess I want to talk about the basses as well, but I kind of want to talk about sort of whilst we're on the thing about necks. You make these very sort of vintage inspired guitars, but the necks are quite modern. Like you go for satin feel necks, or you know, things like baked maple, or their Wenge, or however that word's pronounced.
I'm sticking with Wenge. It was kind of the idea was that they look like those catalog guitars that I really love. So the old K's and Tesco. There's a word that we can argue about. Tysco.
I think you're probably right.
So those guitars, anyway, I love the look of those. But then you pick them up and they're absolute dogs. You have to fight them like all day long, which has its own charm, but it's not necessarily something you want to play like all the time.
Sure.
So that was the idea, that it would look like that, but then when you played it, it felt like a modern, like well-made guitar.
Yeah. So because you even like avoided glossing any necks or anything. They're all like satin fill across the board, or like a, you know, that in the case of the Wenge, that sort of. I never know what to call this. I always end up calling it hand rubbed, which Jay loves. But it's that. That sort of oil feel. Yeah.
No, it's oil. So originally it was about 10 coats of gunstock oil. And then last year, sometime, another local luthier, Jamie Swannell, who makes amazing acoustic guitars, he's a proper trained luthier unlike me, so he's been giving me a few tips. But he recommended something called Rubio monocoat, which is just literally one coat of oil, and you leave it overnight and that's it, done. And it feels amazing, like feels better than the Gunstock oil to my mind. So everything's switched over to that next now. So the next literally have just one coat of oil on them, regardless of what they're made of. And it feels really nice. It feels like a sort of played in vintage guitar.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. That's very cool. And I've got to talk about the basses at risk of losing our audience. I because bass wise, you've gone for a single shape, which is the JB style shape, but it's a larger body, and then you've offered both of the most common scale lengths.
Yeah, so it was...
rather than kind of with the guitars, I guess you did a body shape for each scale length.
Yeah, so that sort of was born out again of what people asked for. So the original prototype for that was a long scale. I've always been more of a bassist than I'm a guitarist. Whenever I was in bands, I was the bassist mainly. And what I played was an old Rickenbacker 4001 V63, which is like the stripped back version of the 4001 with the dot.
No binding dots. Yeah, lovely.
That's the one. The neck pickup didn't work. And the bridge pickup had been swapped out for a high gain. But I loved it. It was amazing. It always sounded great. So that was kind of the starting point. So the original prototype was that scale length, so 33 1/4, I think is right. Rickenbacker scale length. And then we got Mark to wind a pickup in a gold foil casing, but basically it's 4001 pickup in there. But then straight away people started saying, oh, could you do a short scale one of this? Could you do a short scale one of this? So, and I think we've made more of those last year than any other model, that and the Stellarossa.
Really? Wow. Yeah. But the short scale one works because for me the body shape suits more of a short scale. I always find when I'm playing things at a 33, 34 inch scale, I want this is incredibly pedantic, but because I wear the basses so high, this becomes important to me. The upper horn, the strap button, needs to be over the 12th fret so that I'm not reaching a mile away to get to my low end. And because the horns are so small on like the JB body shape, I was like, oh, this is fine if you're wearing it down low, but and I prefer a short scale every day of the week. Like that sort of JB body shape in a short scale was like, oh, this is great. This fits, you know, the same way as like a Dan Electro or an SG or, you know, a Hofner or anything like that. And I kind of think that it's stylistically Fidelity are way more in line with that than they are if you talk about a long scale, we're talking about Fender style stuff.
And part of it is the bridge positioning as well. So I think a lot of those oldest ones that you've referenced there, the bridge is a bit more further into the body than you'd see on a modern bass.
Right.
So I think a lot of the time on a modern bass, or even on a P bass, the bridge is right down at the sort of the end strap pin. And what I wanted to do was put them from an aesthetic perspective, have the bridge a bit more central. But the problem then is that you move the whole scale of the guitar and the neck further out. And so on the long scale length, when you reach for the first fret for the nut end of it, then it's a long, long way away. So I think the comments we've had back from the short scale one is that it feels like a longer bass, but in a comfortable package, whereas the long one is very long because of where the bridge is positioned on it.
Yeah, I certainly felt when I borrowed the short scale one, I was like, man, this absolutely fits perfectly. And you know, you're right, and I think of a Rickenbacker as being quite a long bass, and I think the long scale version feels like that to me. I can totally see that sort of Rickenbacker, and it very much, those pickups were so Rickenbacker-y, you know, as well. It was very much like an alternative to that. But, you know, I felt like with the short scale one, I was like, this is everything I love about those old catalog guitars. And you know, yes, I know this is exactly what you go for on your guitars. But I think, you know, I love guitars as someone who sits around and plays guitars in my bedroom. But I think of basses as much more of an actual practical application because I actually play them live. So when I'm thinking about a bass, I'm thinking about how this is going to work in weird tunings, how this is going to travel to gigs, you know, how the tuning's going to hold up, how I'm going to be able to throw it around live. There's more practical thought rather than just having something, you know, I play an ES-175 guitar. There's no way in the world I would buy that if I actually had to take an instrument anywhere. But with the with the bass, with the short scale version of the JB, I was like, yes, this is absolutely something that works. And the other pickup option that you added for the short scale as well was fantastic.
The series thing.
Yeah.
So that came from an old Dan Electro guitar that I picked up for like £60 on eBay, and it was someone had covered it in like Essex wallpaper, like spangly floral wallpaper. It was horrific. But so that was like the first ever guitar that I that's not true. It's one of the first guitars that I'd done a proper sort of modern refinished job on before I started Fidelis Guitars, but took all that wallpaper off and sort of redid it with paints from Hobbycraft or whatever. But the only pickup position that ever worked on the six-way selector on that was series. So one pickup running into the back of the other and effectively creating a big humbucker.
Yeah.
It just sounded amazing. So I've never fixed that guitar, and every guitar almost every guitar that I've made as Fidelity Guitars has had a series mode in there somewhere, because it's just my favourite sound. You get a gain boost, but you also, it's a bit thicker and darker, and depending on the pickup mix, you can get some really interesting sounds out of it. So on the bass, I put a toggle switch on there that, regardless of what pickup selection position you're in on the main rotary, if you hit that toggle switch, it goes straight into the series mode. So from wherever you are, you can jump straight to your loudest settings. It's kind of your verse chorus switch, like, or your solo switch, I suppose. If you're going for a bass solo, which you often do, I'm sure.
Yeah, so absolutely, who wouldn't?
but even on the bass, it's still my favourite sound. You get, depending on how far apart the pickups are, you start to get a slightly chorusy thing going on as well, which is fine. I know that you're right. It's a really funny one with bass. It's not like the guitar hasn't evolved in the same way that the bass has over the last sort of 20-30 years. Like the modern style bass is still very different to the guitars that major manufacturers of six string electric is still pretty much rooted in the 60s, sort of, whereas the majority of modern bass guitars are not unrecognizable from that, but a long way from it. So it's trying to find a few of those things that make it still a usable tool, but very much still rooted in where the guitar came from originally.
Yeah, absolutely. That pretty much brings us up to time on this week's episode of the Friday Special. But it has been absolutely wonderful to have you on, Matt. Thanks for coming on, taking the time to chat to me and everything.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Oh yeah, not at all. You can check out Fidelity Guitars, listener, if you haven't heard me rattle on about them enough, at fidelity-guitars.co.uk, where you can check out all the models and place an order. You know, if you can place an order for a custom built light model for less than £1,000, which is absolutely outrageous. But you can of course catch more Guitar Nerds over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds, or you can join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds, and we'll be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday special on Friday. Farewell.